Okay, so we're now recording. Welcome everybody. My name is Daniel Four, you got that. And the talk this evening is intended, I think I'm calling it Skills for Effective Prayer, which is maybe a little pretentious, but the intent is to unpackage some key understandings, principles that run through different cultures about the topic of prayer. And I felt guided to say a thing about this topic because it's something that almost any tradition I've encountered includes some type of prayer-like practice. But in my years of being involved in traditions, I haven't often encountered a lot of slowing down and unpackaging of how we actually do that or what's involved with that. And so it feels like it's a topic that could use a little direct attention. So what I don't want to do, as I lay out some key principles that seem important to me, is add to more dogma on the topic. There's so much dogma already. And I know in my own experience, I was initially affiliated with Christianity as a younger person and then had a "this sucks" kind of bad reaction to it. And that caused me to carry an aversion to even the subject or topic of prayer into my other experiences and other traditions. And so I know for some people there can be a association of prayer with an aversion to organized religion. And so I don't want to add, I don't want to exacerbate that at all. So please take whatever I might share. And if it doesn't feel useful, then be curious about how you disagree with it or just notice your reaction, and that's fine. So no new dogma. So what do we even mean when we say prayer? Well, that can mean a whole lot of different things. It can mean what people might describe as centering prayer, which is less about request. It's less about communicating a communion with a energy or a deity or force outside yourself, and more about bringing your body and psyche and sense of self into a bit more alignment with your soul, your more core light or divinity. So in that way, people who are coming from a prayer-oriented tradition would construct even meditation as a kind of prayer. It's a prayer of awakening. May I become deeply awake and in service to all beings. And so prayer doesn't necessarily include asking for things. It doesn't necessarily include saying anything or communing with another force or power outside yourself. But often people take it to mean that. Prayer isn't necessarily spontaneous. Of course, there are liturgical or memorized or formulaic prayers, which if you don't have an immersion in established traditions, that might be a kind of foreign thing to you, or it might feel stuffy, but it's actually really beautiful. As a practitioner of Ifa, some of the examples of formulaic prayers would be the verses of Ifa, and they're memorized. And when you recite them, there's a sense of entraining or aligning with an ancestral pattern. It's the same with people, let's say in Judaism. Some of the prayers are very old and very set, and when you're praying those prayers and pronouncing them correctly in the Hebrew, then you're walking in the same groove as many, many, many ancestors and other living practitioners. So there's a potency that can come from praying in a way that's not only spontaneous, that is personally engaging with a very old spell or configuration of energy that gets good results. So prayer can be like that. And prayer often is spontaneous. It's a sense of speaking or intending some kind of outcome or some kind of greater alignment or wishing well, hopefully, for others. In the most general sense, if you take prayer as an active process of setting or directing intention, you could make harmful prayers as well. And there's a big gray area between harmful and helpful. Like if you're an invading army and if somebody invaded the United States in a really shitty way, I would hope that the magical people that didn't want that to happen would also mobilize to try to stop that. And that would call for using whatever means you have to defend your family and yourself, typically. There's a conference I went to in Duke in North Carolina on Haitian Vodun, and one of the folks from Haiti was speaking about their perception that from a Haitian Vodun perspective, people have an obligation, a moral obligation, to use magic to improve your life, which I thought was great. And it's totally like a sorcery stance. And it's not saying that people should be unethical. It's saying that there's not a split between the secular and the sacred. And if there's 20 people applying for a job and you see the electricity that is involved in computers as a kind of sorcery, and 19 of them are going to use email and do their research, and you're not going to do that because you don't want to be involved in sorcery, then you're not going to get the job. And so there's an advantage that can be conferred through using your magical spiritual training to seek to get the outcomes that you want in life. The issue is not using the magical technology. The issue is about being ethical and making sure that you're asking for wise and kind and beneficial things. So prayer in that way is, there's not a sharp distinction in my mind from my training and what I've seen between prayer and other kinds of magical ritual work to get certain outcomes. And so if you say, oh, well, you're just praying for someone, but over here you're praying for someone and you're making offerings, or you're praying for someone and you're bringing a lot of passion to it, or you're doing these other things to amplify it. So my point here is that if folks come on the call, I'm just going to mute you. Nothing personal. We're just recording it. So if you have questions, feel free to type them in the chat. So my point here is that don't make a harsh distinction between prayer and other kinds of magical practices. A lot of traditionalists that I've seen don't actually make that distinction. When we make prayers, we sometimes also offer a ram or a goat or a sheep or a cow or something. And there are a couple hours of ritual work around it. So that's a lot of energy that's being mobilized and a lot of food that's being generated for the living community. And so you better know what you're praying about. If there's that much energy, it's good to have really clear intent. So let's talk about what are the kinds of things that one can pray about. Now, that might seem like an obvious thing, but there's actually a lot of difference in different traditions about that topic. I encounter a lot of people who are really uncomfortable praying for money, praying for prosperity. I have not, in my time in West Africa, found any West Africans uncomfortable praying for that. And so they're like, if you don't want to pray for money, I'll pray for your money. Like, no problem. And so I'm like, wow, that's great. That's such good medicine. And the point is that what people sometimes have the view, and I see it as a kind of cultural damage, or at least something that I don't resonate with, that your spiritual life and your everyday life are somehow separable. If that is how you're approaching spirit, I would suggest that there's a split there that's worth exploring. That this life, this everyday life, is quite sacred. And so from a Yoruba perspective, for example, we might pray for Ire Aiku, Ire Omo, Ire Owo, Ire Ashegun. So the blessing or Ire of Aiku, long life. If you're not sure what to pray for a long life and health. If you're not sure that you want a long life, pray to address your death wish and that you figure out what you need to do to shift your conditions here so that on a soul level, you're more invested in being here. Because if you don't really want to be here, it's tough to be successful. You kind of need to be all the way in order to get good results with the whole earth situation. And if you are committed to being here, you want to stay here. You want to not have premature death or illness, sickness. So you pray for that. Pray for that for the people you love. If you have long life. Next, you might pray for children if you want children. But beyond that, the ireomo is about also the success of your endeavors, that whatever creations of beauty or productivity or care and kindness in the world that you're bringing, you want them to be successful. And it's okay to pray for prosperity. And that doesn't mean you are, well, it's okay to pray for a lot of prosperity and then to use it well. And to ask that your needs be met. Sorry, a crazy kitten in the background. Mm. And the other type of prayer that I named in Yoruba is Ireya Shegun, which is a prayer of victory over obstacles or enemies, which is great and also stretches us culturally a little bit, I think. And it's not that you're asking for others to be harmed, but it is okay to say, I am clear about fulfilling my destiny. Anyone or anything that would get in the way of me doing that, may they gently and kindly be moved aside so that I can do that. If they are not willing to be moved aside, may they be moved aside however is needed, because I'm quite committed to doing what I'm here to do. May the beings that would interfere with me fulfilling my purpose have the good sense to not interfere. May they figure it out some other way. That really gets back to your commitment to be here. So if you're like, I'm really committed to be here, but I don't want to upset anybody. Well, what the fuck are you going to do? There's no way to fulfill your destiny without rocking the boat a little bit, usually. So pray that you want to be here and that you have longevity and that you're successful and prosperous and have victory over the troubles that will come to you as a basic template and default. And if that is uncomfortable, then explore what's uncomfortable about that. It's okay to claim a little space. You want to make sure you're an ethical person so that your success looks like lifting others up and helping the world. So it's not about being a, you know, rich, powerful supervillain, but it's okay to be successful. And of course, it's good to pray for other people. Of course, it's good to pray for the world and the end of oppression and the flowering of biological diversity and a cultural revolution and all the things that we desperately need. And make sure that you're handling yourself first. So those are some basic things to pray for. If you are struggling, pray for what you need. Like, the more authentic you can be in your prayers, the more alive they are, the more chance that they show up on the spirit radar and they actually get heard and listened to in some way. So let me speak through five what I would consider practices or maybe principles that I have found can contribute to more enlivened or more potent prayers, and see if you can find your way into this or what, you know, maybe snags for you on it. One is, give some care and attention to your own state before your prayers. I spend a little bit of time as a practicing Muslim in North Africa, and we do a wudu and ghusl, the ritual purification before the salat and the prayers. And so praying five times a day and ritually washing with water before prayer really reinforce this principle of being in a state of, and this is a word that has baggage, but ritual purity, or ritual clarity, let's say. I've seen it in Native American church ceremonies, for example, that the water woman in the morning would come and cleanse not just with cedar, or, you know, sometimes with sage before the ceremony or during, but also through asking forgiveness for any ways that she's harmed others, so that she can be in a state that's conducive to praying for the community. She's about to pray over the water that everyone's going to drink. And so if her energy's off, everybody participates in it. And so the more, like, if you have a really big prayer you're going to do, let's say for Sundance, for example, is a major ceremony for people following Lakota and other Plains culture traditions, and is held as a multi-day, very physically and spiritually rigorous kind of prayer. And so people might do purification through sweat lodges, Inipi ceremonies, and other kinds of fasting and other kinds of things throughout the year. So the preparation for prayer can be very extensive. And the more you give attention to the state that you're in, when you really sit down to do what you're going to do, the more potent what you do is. And that can look like wearing intentional clothing. It can look like cleansing through water, smoke, other kinds of just chanting or singing just to get yourself in a conducive state. So notice if you have a practice of prayer, what happens if you pray for do something like prayer for, let's say, 15 minutes, a couple times a week. Try preparing for 5 minutes and praying for 10 minutes. Like actually get yourself in a really clear and vital state. That can happen too. Like you wake up at 4 a.m. and it's like, I can't go back to sleep. I feel kind of cracked open. Well, then pray then, because you're in a state that's already conducive to it. Use when the openness is there, make use of it ritually. So tend to your state before you drop in. 2, notice who you're connecting to. Pray with the relevant powers. Like if you are trying to call in children, you might want to approach the deities that are associated with fertility. If you're trying to whoop ass because people are totally up in your space and threatening you and you need protection and a little more aggro energy, you might not go first to the deities who rule over fertility unless your pantheon kind of combines all that. And so there are different aspects of the sacred that have different capacities. If you wanted to go get dental work, you would make sure to go to the dentist and not the grocery store, right? So if you say that one aspect of prayer is about relationship with the bigger forces that you're calling upon to have a successful life, then it makes sense to really slow down and consider what force you're calling on. And if you don't have a half dozen or more forces that you know of, then you can make a point to try to expand that vocabulary a little bit. And it's tricky because you might, like there are some prayers, to give an example in Orisha tradition, there are deities that I have developed relationship with and some that I have very little relationship with, but I know of them. And so I don't have a strong direct relationship with Omalu or Babalu Aye, who's an Orisha of smallpox and an infectious disease. But if I had a situation where myself or someone close to me was really struggling with infectious disease, I might go to that power because I'm like, hey, you specialize in this. What's up? And to do that, I might need to approach a priest or someone else who has a relationship with that deity. So if you know that you need to approach the spirits of the land or the local waters, for example, you might be like, well, I could just walk down to the river and be like, what's up, Columbia River? Brought you an orange. Or you could also be curious, which is good. You know, don't mean to make fun of that. You could also ask, is there anyone who really focuses on work with this power? Is there anyone who's a specialist here? If so, like maybe you approach them and say, hey, I'm needing prayers, I think, in this specific way in my life. I hear that you have a gift in this domain, or you're good with these deities. Can you help me out? And then go there. So don't assume that you have automatic access to all the different faces of the divine that you haven't even been cultivating relationship with over time. You may not have that access or you may be well served by supporting someone who does. That's basic traditional, like go to the medicine person kind of stuff. We do the same stuff with buying therapy or, you know, buying whatever, any kind of service. We're like, oh, you have this skill. I don't have it. Let me pay you some money. Great. It kind of works out. We don't have to do everything that way. So when you're going to when you have a prayer, this like a need that you're going to express through prayer, notice who you're bringing it to. And know that prayer is often more effective when done in partnership with different aspects of the sacred. So part of the way that we get effective prayer is we link up to bigger forces and energies. It doesn't have to always be that way, but I think that if you don't ever have an element of praying in communion or connection with the powers, then explore it. See what would it be like to bring that in. And drawing on a connection with your own loving ancestors or with the Earth Mother or with just God on the rocks, like all those can work as ways in. So, yeah. So last thing on that is if you're going to actually tap in to another power, like you decide who you're going to bring your prayer to, actually drop in first. Don't just start talking at that deity. So if you go to the shrine of Omalu because you have some infectious disease and you're appealing to that deity for help, bring offerings, like drop in, invoke, listen, make sure that there's a sense of like, okay, I'm listening, young man, what do you have? Before you pray. So make sure the connection's strong before you launch into it. Yeah. Good. So third out of five things that I want to convey is the actual tone of the prayer itself. And what I have observed and found helpful for me, especially in Native North American circles and in West African tradition, is pray out loud most of the time. And pray with vulnerability and pray with clarity if you can. And I understand that it can be awkward awkward and vulnerable to pray out loud, especially when everybody's there, people are listening, whatever it is. Get used to it, practice it by doing that on your own, when you're alone. One of the most core practices I recommend to people who have one practice to recommend, talk to the spirits out loud, talk to yourself. Like, if not, I mean, it's not just to yourself, but talk in a way that people outside you would think you're talking to yourself. And get comfortable with it so that when someone comes along and they're like, Daniel, pray, be like, okay, hey, spirits, may you have this, this, and that. Boom, boom, boom. You want, ideally, to be able to be comfortable in any given moment just praying aloud for whatever's needed. That because it's so natural to speak directly to the sacred that when someone's like, hey, will you pray for me? It's like, oh, that's easy. And then you pray right to you pray past them almost. You pray past the outer personality and identity to ask that the inner divinity that's animating them be well and in balance and have what's needed, etc. So get comfortable praying out loud. Vulnerability is certainly nice with the prayers if you can. Because when, you know, especially if you've been in ceremony, like some people have done sweat lodges, you know, people tend to sometimes just tank the ceremony by praying a long time without much vulnerability and, you know, bless their long-winded hearts. But there's a taboo, which is really beautiful in Native North American circles, generally from my experience, of not interrupting people, which is great. And it means that the one speaking needs to be self-responsible and regulate what they're saying. And so if you have to listen to somebody for 10 minutes, you ideally want them to be clear. You want them to be like emotionally connected and not just rambling. And so go like that with the prayers. We had somebody doing ritual work. I don't mean to pick on him. I don't think he's going to listen to the talk. With our teacher in West Africa and Nigeria recently. And you pray during the offerings. So they're doing ritual work and there's animals being offered and everything. And our teacher will call you and be like, pray for your life. Okay, now pray. And he prayed for like a half an hour. And then so my teacher calls me. He's like, Baba, so-and-so prayed for like a half an hour. I'd be like, sorry, I'll talk to him. But he just laughed about it. It was funny. But the point was, when it's time, like, you want to be able to just go for it. Be like, bring me and my home and my wife happiness and protection. Help us to be awesome with each other, to be successful and to be joyful. Help our work to be well in the world. Help this call to be good. Help people to have what they need from this recording. Help our country to straighten out and things to get more just and fair. Boom, 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 whatever it is. And that I'm not trying to dictate a certain style of prayer, because some traditions will go for super flowery, involved prayer. It's fine. But what I'm saying is, notice the energy and the aliveness of it. And if there are other humans present that are listening to you, see if you can pray in a way that you don't lose them, that they're actually like engaged in what's happening. So this is a practice that takes real practice over years to refine. But you know, if you've been around ritual, that some people pray in a lively, heartfelt, succinct way that you're just like, yes, that. And other people don't yet have that down. And that's fine, but seek to get that down. It's a real gift, and it is not just more pleasing to be around. It makes for a more focused and crisp and understandable message on a spirit level. Like, it's easier for the spirit people that are participating in your prayer to read it. Because if you're like, you know, I won, and they're like, what did they say? And the next person's like, I decided I'm not going to kill myself. I want to live. Help me to live. They'll be like, oh, we heard that. That's understandable. We got it. And so make it clear, if you can, with heart. So that's a less tangible skill, but it's one worth cultivating. It's totally a learnable thing. Yeah? Okay. I'll give one example on that, and then there's two other points, and then we'll be in dialogue. There's a lovely book I read years ago. It's A Man Who Fell in Love with the Moon by Tom Spanbauer. And I sometimes reference this one scene in it where there's a healing scene at the end, and someone's being trained in how to do doctoring work. And somebody's got their hands on somebody who's about, who might die or is really injured. And they're like, how do I do it? How do I bring the energy? And the one training them is like, start saying true things. Say the most honest, true things you can think of, and just go with that. And the sense is that the more vulnerable and real and alive you can be with your speech in prayer, the more effective and energized and effective your prayers are going to be. So go for what's real and honest. Yeah, it's where the energy's at. Good. Two other things. One, offerings are great. I come from a background ritually that's really valuing of offerings and giving something. There's a lot of different opinions about this. So there's not just one. People are going to have diametrically opposed opinions on this topic. Like my experience with Islam, for example. We don't necessarily do offerings when we do prayers. There's not like offering of incense. There's not much offering. People might offer a goat at a big ceremony or something, but it's not seen in the same way it's seen in West African Ifa, for example, or in a lot of indigenous traditions. But I've found ritually in my own experience that it brings the relationship alive when you're combining your prayers with offerings. Now, there's an assumption when I'm saying that you're involving other powers besides just you in the offering, in the prayer, rather, that you're bringing your prayers to a deity or something. So you're offering, whatever the prescribed offerings are or spontaneous offerings, when you make those, it's a way of strengthening the relationship. And it's a way of feeding usable energy into the request or the prayer that you're making. And let me find, somebody's not on mute here. There we go. What do I want to say about this? It's a big topic. I don't want to create a dogma about it. If you have a practice of prayer that does not include offerings, I'm not implying you're doing it wrong. But I'm saying, see if there's a way. Offerings can be a physical, tangible thing or a non-tangible thing. It could be simple, like water, a candle. It could be a mantra or some type of recited thing, a song, but some way of feeding connection into the relationship with the power that you're making a request of will likely bring a better result. It's been so ingrained in my own experience with Ifa practice, because we do a lot of offering practice and kind of gets results. It's part of what draws me to it. Like if you aren't concerned about results and efficacy with your ritual work, like what are you doing? Like it's why you do it. I mean, you could do it for beauty and enjoyment, and that's cool too. But at least from my own background, this question of are your prayers getting results? It's a fair question. You want to notice what's working and how to build on that. And to, if something isn't working or like you're not getting results, things seem stuck. It doesn't mean you always get what you want, but if there isn't a sense of movement and engagement that's coming from it, then be suspicious of that. Yeah. So, okay, I want to head soon to the dialogue, so I don't want to talk to death, but make some offerings. We could talk about ways to do that, but that's the short version of it. Explore it if you haven't. If you don't know where to start, make offerings to the earth and to your ancestors and trust your instincts on it, but give a little. And then the last thing is, it's a little less tangible, but be ready to live your fulfilled prayer. Like be ready to receive it and to know that the way that you're, that you have to be ready to, for the prayer to end and for the results to happen. Like if you, for example, Laura, I see on the call, pray, you get a message from your ancestors that they're going to pay for you to go to do an ancestral pilgrimage to Siberia. And then you're like, oh, okay. And then you put it out there and then it starts happening. It's like your job is to stop. I don't want to say stop praying, but then you need to like be in, you need to embody it then. There's a sense that you're like, okay, this is what's happening. I asked for this. Here we go. And it can become, almost everybody who's done ritual work has had some experience of, oh, should I ask for that? And like, oh, and it kind of goes like, yeah, you did. And you're like, oh, I guess I need to do that now. They're like, yeah, you do, kind of. And so, it doesn't mean you don't have choice, but my point is to be sensitive to the different unpredictable ways that a prayer can be answered. And when it is beginning to happen in some way, to say thank you, say ashe, say like Laura is typing, yeah, it changes from a may I please have this to a thank you prayer. And make sure that you follow through with a sense of gratitude. And recognition that there is a conversation that's unfolding. You're like, okay, great. I have got that breadcrumb. What next? What next? And so that dance, you know, keeps the prayer shifts from like, may I raise enough money to go to Siberia to may I have a safe trip? May I make the connections I need? Okay, it's happening. So yeah, there are more tears shed over answered prayers. Yeah, and or I've heard also some of the biggest blessings are unanswered prayers. That too, yeah. So we don't always know what is good for us. And so one of the indicators of wisdom is learning how to effectively use your speech over time and to be responsible with your speech in what you call in. Like, I've heard people during prayer, while like the gates are really open, or like in community ceremony or during an animal offering, pray for something that feels off. And I'm like, oh, it's very uncomfortable when people are like asking for someone to be harmed or asking. I'm like, oh, don't do that. And so there is a great responsibility that comes with just making intent. I mean, we are creative, magical beings. Some people are inherently really tapped in a way that they can manifest things quickly, and they don't necessarily have the wisdom to handle that well. For most people, that capacity comes online bit by bit over time, and hopefully we can keep pace with it with our wisdom. But more often, most people, generally speaking, are under-risking in terms of their spiritual practice and prayers, meaning they're not actually having the vulnerability to ask in a passionate way for what they want to call in their lives. So if you're not risking, then that's where the focus needs to be. If you're there, then, you know, it could be a 10,000 different things. But prayer implies dependence or interconnectedness, interdependence. And if you don't have any prayers, I tell people in ritual, I'm like, if you can't think of anything to pray for, pray for me. I'm serious. I'm like, I'll take it. And our faiths are really intertwined with one another. And it's okay to have a whole day where your prayers are mostly about the world and you're kind of in a cracked open grieving, Holy Mother Earth, may we do better. Sorry we're so ill-behaved. I'm sorry that our ignorance hurts you. And to just bring that quality of prayer. And then on a different day to be like, I need more money and whatever. And that's okay too. So mix it up. But the neediness that we are just stuck with as dependent beings, but we fight, can come out in prayer in a way that's healthy and recognizes our dependence on the others. So that's mostly what I want to say. Let me see if there's anything else. If you have questions, type them up if you're willing to do that. I can take people off audio, but it gets a little crazy. So if you can type it, that's great. Yeah. I see a lot of folks have shame and inhibition about voice in the way that we've been often judged about our voice. And that can come up as a block around prayer and song. So there's a lot around, you could say, third or a throat chakra, fifth chakra stuff, if you want to think of it that way, with prayer. And the thing that can be vulnerable in addition to just having your voice heard, I think because people might feel totally comfortable speaking and then you ask them to pray and they're like deeply contracted. And I think part of it is implying or being witness having needs and being vulnerable. So that can feel like it's a setup to be attacked, or it's too much exposure. And so that's an edge to work with. And also there's a piece where when people are afraid to pray, to me, it's a good sign that they take it seriously and that they understand that there's a authenticity that's called for. And the authenticity of alignment of the individual self with your own soul or bigger self is implied in asking for what you want from the powers, from the divinities, from the sacred, you don't want to front and ask for something you don't really need. So when you are bringing vulnerability, yeah, that's where the power is at, though. That's what I mean to say. It's like, if it can be vulnerable, you really get the spirit's attention. Yeah. And I see Stella saying that it can be good for people to pray out loud and group at the same time. Absolutely. Or just sometimes you make a ruckus. In Lodge, sometimes people sing like loud Lodge songs. And then it's like, all right, pray. And then people can really pray. Or it helps to be in the dark in Lodge or whatever it is. But we do, it happens in the open in Ifa. Ocean saying, how about just speaking in a confidant kind of way with spirit? And I think it's great. Thank you, Laura. Yeah. I guess I make a distinction a little with prayer as a kind of intention setting action or it's a directive process in some ways. And although it's not always that, yes to what you're bringing, Ocean. Absolutely. Sometimes we just need to speak and be heard with the spirits, and we're not asking for something, we're not praying per se, but we're just talking to them. And I think it's a great practice. And it's not that different from any intimate partnership or friendship. You're not always asking for something. But when you have the relational capital built up, you have the intimacy that's built up over years, and then you're like, you know, I need something. Then there's response. When you look at old school ritualists and suddenly something really big and important needs to happen, it's not that they need to exert a lot of energy. They're just like, hey, powers that I've been relating with for 40 years, I need something. Go bring a blessing to Ocean. And they're like, okay. Like, this dude takes care of us. We need, you know, he wants something, so okay. And so the way that a lot of old school traditionalists become potent in their prayers is through being very devoted and cultivating those relationships throughout their everyday life. So when they need to be called on, they're available. And that just sweet conversation you're describing, Ocean, and is a way to cultivate that connection. So good. Others, if you need it, you give me a hand signal or something. I could take you off mute, but I don't have a video on everybody. So if you're able to type it, if you have a thing, that's great. I see it from Maddie. No, it's good. Sometimes, again, speaking to just nurturing the relationship with the powers. We have a lot of needs here. And so if we can ask, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to be only coming when we're in need. Absolutely. So it is a relationship. And it's important to be willing to receive. I think most people have a harder time with that because of more or less conscious low self-esteem. And so it makes it hard for people to really be healed up or drink from the blessings of the weird old powers, because they're like, oh, who am I? I don't deserve it. I'm not an Indian, or I'm not whatever story it is. Like, I'm not spiritual enough. I'm not the right background, whatever it is. And that's not helpful. It's important. Like, one of the ways I think the weird old powers test us is they want to see if we will drink, if we're able to actually recognize our own longing and hunger and thirst. And there's a test it's written of in Sylvia Pereira's Celtic Queen Maeve. She's a Jungian analyst, and she's writing about the Irish goddess Maeve, of the goddess of the land, and says that one of the tests that the young men who would potentially become leaders or kings are faced with from the goddess is she comes to them and says, anything you wish, three things, just tell me in a breath. And her unpackaging of that challenge that's given to the young men is that because the king has to rule to blessing of the mothers and the divine feminine and the land, or else he's not going to be successful. And if they withdraw that blessing, typically be executed or at least excused from leadership responsibilities. And the sense of that test is, if you don't know what you want enough to ask for it on the spot, I'm not sure if I can trust you, because I'm not sure if you know you. And if you don't know you, you're not going to be a good leader, because you're not going to know other people. You're not going to be able to see them and meet them well. So that, yeah, there's something in there about the vulnerability piece. Somebody's off mute there. I see Stella saying, sometimes you rage and at the spirits in your prayers. Yeah, fair enough. I think it, they can handle it. The authenticity, I wouldn't approach a new deity for the first time with that energy. But if you have an established relationship, they can handle it. And you're not going to break them, and they respond to the authenticity of it. And Peter's saying about how praying out loud is, it hasn't been a familiar thing, and so it can feel unsafe or have a judgment to it. We do, totally, it's common. Yeah. One of the practices we'll have when we're in Nigeria or here too, is we'll take a bottle of gin and crack it open in a certain way and then do a shot and pray. Pray and do a shot. Pray and do a shot. Pray and do a shot. I think there are rituals much like this in a lot of parts of the world. And it's great. It's people naturally get a little more relaxed as the praying progresses. But it's very intimate. And when people are doing their invocation, like showing what they got and praying from one another, really, really intimate. So that's the flip, is that it can actually be a kind of communion. I've seen it in Native American church ceremonies and lodges as well. When people, you know, to see men at 4 a.m. on peyote, just like big dudes, like sobbing about, you know, their worries for their children and the state of the earth and all that. And people are really cracked open. I'm like, yeah, that's great. These people are being grown-ups. They are like leading with heart, coherent at 4 a.m. on medicine, and just like nailing it with the like clear, open-hearted speech. Love it. So encouraging. So Estelle is asking about my experience of praying in English compared to Yoruba. My Yoruba is still clunky. My Yoruba is not really good enough to go for it with Yoruba, but I give it what I got with Yoruba and then run out of steam and then switch to English. I like both. I sometimes like praying in other languages. Like I speak Spanish pretty well. So sometimes if I'm driving or praying in the car, it helps me to get out of my conceptual brain to speak in it's like writing with your non-dominant hand. It can be nice to use a language that you're less strong with if you have a second language. Every language has got its own energetic situation and signature and spirits and everything. So if you have more than one language, for sure, explore praying in whatever you got and notice how they function differently. there have been, yeah. Depends on the context too. Like I know enough Yorba that in ritual with other American people doing Ifa that it could help them to feel more connected to the tradition. But I still sound kind of dumb probably to Yorba people, but they like that I'm trying. And so, being there, the moments where it lines up are really, really precious. So there's a way in which traditions are embedded in language. And if you can, like, if you're going to do Judaism, it really makes a big difference to get a little Hebrew happening. Like, if you're going to do Ifa stuff, try to get a little Yoruba. If you like, whatever your tradition is, like, if you can get a little bit of that language, it helps with the prayers. It does, I think. Good. Does anybody else have, let me take it off mute for a sec. It's going to be maybe crazy, but I want to see if anybody who can't type in has a question. So I'm going through and unmuting some people. So Aurelia, Eva, and Laura in New York City. So speak up if you got something while we got a minute here. I just like to give people a chance to say
things. I have a question if there's space for it.
Yeah, go ahead, Aurelia. I'm going to mute some other people. Keep talking.
I am at a point where...
Oops, sorry. Oh. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I am at a place where I feel as if spirits that I've been speaking to for 20, 22 years now just aren't hearing me, as if I'm somehow blocked in my attunement or communication with them, as if I'm speaking to nothing, whereas these relationships used to be, let's call it rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure what to do about it. I mean, I'm still, I guess I could say I'm at a place where I'm not sure who's on my team anymore.
Sure.
Even though I'm still doing broad general, you know, hey, good morning, benefactors. Here's some offering for you. For those of you who, you know, love and care for me, it's become a very generic thing.
Yeah.
Whereas before it was very much, you know, good morning, Freya. How are you? Good morning, you know. Yemaya, yeah, how are you?
No, it's something, there's a risk of stagnancy in all kinds of, in spiritual practice in general. So, of course, it could be that your practice is migrating in a different direction. It could be that they are just kind of watching you be like, what's going on? Like, is she going to shake it up? Like, are we going to do this in a, like, there could be a, I don't want to presume what's happening. It could be a lot of different things, but my first instinct in listening to you is bring more intensity to it. And it's like do less, and what you do, have it be more intense and more connective. Like only, like go through a period of time, it's almost like a cleanse or a fast where you're only engaging if it's at a certain level of vividness or intensity. And bring the question to them in like, you know, what's going on? Are you bored with me? Are we done? Are you breaking up with me? Like, what is this?
Right.
So
exactly.
And that's fine. It's fine. It took me years and years to finally settle into a tradition. And I'm still settling into it. And it's kind of a relief in a way. But yeah, there have been times where I was really close with a certain power. And then gradually over time, it's just like, I'm sorry. Like, love you. Had a good 5 years. Moving to a different tradition. Peace. Like, it's okay. It happens. Yeah. But yeah, I know it's kind of a vague answer, but that's my sense is bring intensity to them and call them out. Be like, is this me or is this you? Like, am I just like kind of bored with you, or are you not showing up? So, yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we'll finish soon here. You're saying shifting up. Yeah. Look, I think in some ways prayer is a lot, and I see your thing, Tamira, as well. Prayer is a lot about learning to follow where the energy is at. If we're not careful, we'll get stagnant in our practice. I do that too sometimes. And then some part of me is like, what are you doing, Daniel? You're just doing the same thing. Is that working? And the spirits are like, yawn. Yes, you know the ritual. You're doing the ritual. It's so boring. I'm like, okay. So don't do that. They're like, are you doing that for our sake? Don't blame that on us. You don't get a reward for doing that. And so go where the life is, or else you're not going to keep doing it. You're eventually going to be like, yeah, okay, I'd rather watch Netflix. This is, you know, blah. And so you got to go where the life's at. Otherwise it's boring to them too. So, you're welcome, Tamira. And yeah, don't worry about consistency. It's overrated a little bit with practice. I mean, I feel like so many people are so hard on themselves all the time about stuff that do whatever you can do to just get to practice. And when you get to practice, which isn't separate from everyday life, like, let it be whatever brings you into connection with the powers, really. And like, there's such a need to keep this dimension and the more subtle dimension stitched together right now, because there's a heavy confusion, like physical world is only what it is, aggressive overlay that is trying to squelch out the more stitched together spiritual reality right now. And so whatever you can do to be the little bubbles in the champagne and to like keep this, the other realms stitched together with this physicality, do that. Don't worry about the dogma or the outer form of it. If you wake up one day and you realize you love traditions and you want to learn the form, great, you can do that. But most people aren't called to that. So most people got to like just do what is lively and nourishing. So great. Thanks, everybody. It's good. It's good seeing your faces and your names and all that. And I wish we had I wish we could sit in a circle and have it not have to put you all on mute. Sorry about that. And, sorry. Good. Hey, I got a book coming out. I'm supposed to talk about that. I got a book coming out in July. So if you're into that, get the book. And it's about the ancestor stuff. You got that. And I'm going to put the talk on my, I'm going to stop recording here for a sec. Okay.